wasn't war.
Jesus was.
Oh, when he wore.
Jesus was.
When Jesus wore.
Jesus was.
He washed my sins away.
Oh, happy day.
Oh, happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting but not video streaming from our studios through New York City. I welcome you. Today, no guest. We like to keep one day to go into a lot of commentaries. Ones that I've written, I try to write and present at least three or four commentaries a week. I believe that that's a very important missing link for those in the radio community and then general media who would like to go in deeper onto subjects and more objectively. Today, from our public health segment, breaking news on Fukushima, the latest from a Yale professor compelling that the world wake up from its nuclear slumber and face some cold hard facts. Quote, all of humanity will be threatened for thousands of years if the Fukushima Unit 4 pool cannot be kept cool. It could be 15,000 times worse than Hiroshima with removal of fuel rods. Also from our environmental segment today, a new study from MIT. They found that 200,000 Americans are dying from pollution each year. We didn't know that anyone was dying. We've been told by the EPA, by the U.S. Public Health Services, by the CDC, no one dies. Not true. 200,000 die, making it one of the top 10 leading causes of death in the United States, and zero being done about it. Also today, we're going to look on public health. A UCLA study shows that radiation treatment makes breast cancer worse, and that natural therapies don't. Also, separately today, millions wrongly treated for cancer. This is according to the National Cancer Institute's panel, and yet you've heard nothing about either of these studies in the mainstream media, which is one of the reasons that I choose the topics each day that you will not hear on Democracy Now! Or anyone or anyplace else. You'll hear them uniquely here because we look for the truth and only the truth. No corporate liberal, corporate Democrat, corporate Republican, corporate conservative, no spin, religious, political, ideological. It's just whatever the truth is, that's what gets out. And also today, a more in-depth commentary from Colin Todhunter from Global Research on the global elite's crimes against humanity. As you know, if you listen to the Monday evening Progressive Commentary Hour, and last week, we thanked the 127,000 who listened. We believe, we meaning those of us Americans who are looking just at the facts, believe that we're in the midst of a corporate takeover. We believe that our bureaucracies have expanded beyond any reasonable need for the public, and they become out of control, metastasizing, technocratic, stables where the leaders of the banking community, of the oil cartels, the gas cartels, the nuclear, of Wall Street, of all these different groups, they use the bureaucracies to their advantage and against us. I'll go further into that today. It'll be a commentary you won't want to miss. And then new information that you have not heard in any of the media, and what depresses many people is you're not hearing this in the liberal media, with rare exception. Yes, you'll hear it on Bonnie Faulkner's Guns and Butter, and just a handful of others. But they all are very careful to watch where their funding comes from. If your funding comes from a nonprofit liberal foundation, there are certain unstated commitments. You don't go after Barack Obama, or you didn't go after Clinton, or you won't go after Hillary. You won't look at their sends no missions. You have to stay clear of that. Just like the environmental groups long ago could have staged massive efforts, massive demonstrations on behalf of the planet, it has not. Only individuals have, but groups haven't. They've been very, very remiss in this, and that's because they're receiving money from these corporations. So until we realize how much the corporate elite has in influencing us, we'll continue to be manipulated. And finally, Teddy, if time permits, I've been saying for a long time that our best investment in the future is zero debt as individuals and gold and silver. At the same time I'm saying that, people are saying, yeah, but it's a great time to buy. I don't believe so. I believe that we're about to lose the dollar as a reserve currency, and when that happens, I believe that you're going to see the value of real estate in the United States for most areas plummet. I also believe that gold and silver have been intentionally held at a very low actual value. Today, from Washington Blog, I'll give you the proof behind that. And I believe that if gold and silver were allowed to rise in a free market, which they claim they want, that gold would be about $6,000 an ounce and silver would be around $100 to $150 an ounce. So just imagine where that's going to go when China passes the United States in the next 2 to 3 years as the world's leading economy, and then any intervening crisis in the Middle East, and it'll just hasten how quickly the world demands the dollar as the reserve currency. So anyhow, I'm going to get into that if we have time. Let's begin. Needless to say, it's a time of anxiety and for some depression. The main way that we go about dealing with these is we go about medical intervention. Now, there's no good science at all that taking any of their antipsychotic medications, their antidepressant medications, will actually reverse your condition. It won't. And anyone who studied the literature knows that. But at least it will put you in an altered state. Now, of course, the other side of that altered state is you may not feel any pain, but you also may have a desire for suicide. So here is the latest way that we can go about dealing with anxiety and depression in a non-harmful way. It's something as simple as chamomile. That's correct. A simple herbal tea. It allows you to relax. And there are many other benefits to relaxing and to help stave off depression and anxiety. According to a study at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, they showed that chamomile is remarkable in its benefit in treating anxiety. And this was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study. And it worked. So I would suggest that if you're finding yourself stressed, just have yourself a cup of chamomile tea, one or two tea bags. Separately, I've always recommended it for people with digestive problems, mouth sores, migraines, insomnia. It can make a difference. Now, there are metals in our environment that are essential, and there are metals that are not. And there's one metal that's just ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And that's in a lot of our food, it's in a lot of what we wear, and it's a lot of what we inject into our children. According to Sayer G. of Green Med Info, we're not paying attention to aluminum. And he is right. There's a new study in the Journal of Inorganic Biochemistry, and it highlights that exposure to aluminum can increase migratory and invasive properties of human breast cancer cells. Now, that's very important because what it does, it simply speeds up the spread of the tumor, and that's not good. There's also some new work from the National Cancer Institute, and they recently called for the complete reclassification of some types of non-progressive breast cancers and prostate cancers as essentially benign lesions. And so that means that we've been over-diagnosing and mistreating and over-treating many so-called cancers that were really just as they want to have reclassified as benign lesions. But you got to understand this going back to this aluminum. Aluminum is everywhere. It's in the vaccines. When they took the mercury out, they put aluminum in, and it's an adjuvant. It actually makes what they're using it more powerful. In fact, it's at 11, sometimes 100,000 times lower than found in certain consumer products and still able to cause cancer. So you don't need a lot of aluminum for it to cause damage. Another recent study, also published in the Journal of Inorganic Biochemistry, found increased levels of aluminum in in what is called the collected nipple aspirate fluids from breast cancer patients, and compared to healthy women who did not have it. And it was in all these women's breast fluids. So there's an association between aluminum and breast cancer, which is one of the reasons that we have suggested chelation therapy, green juices, green vegetables, to help chelate out aluminum. Vitamin C also is a natural chelator. But then people put it on their body as an antiperspirant, the deodorizer, and topical applications. And that can also create a lot of cancer. So from the antiperspirant formulas, which is also a new article in the Journal of Applied Toxicology, aluminum is used in underarm cosmetics, and aluminum chloride is capable of altering breast cancer cells in a way that is indicative of neoplastic transformation, meaning taking a healthy cell, making it into a cancer cell. So get rid of the aluminum everywhere you can. That means when you're getting a deodorant, get a non-chemicalized deodorant. It's also an endocrine disruptor. Now, barium, cadmium, cobalt, lead, mercury, nickel, selenite, and vanadate are all endocrine disruptors. And they can change your hormones. And that you don't want. So let's eat intelligently. The more green juices you have, the less aluminum, lead, cadmium that you're going to have in your body. Hence the less breast cancer and the less overall cancers. The more vitamin C you take, with quercetin, also a natural chelator, takes out the heavy metals. All good. Now, something about GMOs, and we're going to continue to give you the latest. You think, well, how in the world could at one point 90% of the people in California be against genetically modified foods, wanting them labeled, and yet when they voted on it, they voted for it, meaning for banning of the label. So now they don't know if they're eating anything that's genetically engineered or not. What was the propaganda campaign that was put on with tens of millions of dollars? We're finding that less successful because we learned lessons from the California defeat, and we've been applying our own articles where we lay out their lies. Let me just give you some of the latest lies and the truth behind it. This is from Ethan Huff of Natural News. Now, first we have a French researcher and a great scientist, Seralini, and he published what was the second major study on the deleterious effects of eating Monsanto's genetically modified corn. And but people are still confused. Why? Because when you look at a debate, it's never a debate. If it's on Fox or MSNBC or CNN, they're never debates. There are always people selected from think groups, think tanks, foundations who are all connected to corporate interest, and therefore you might have one like Juan Williams that is supposed to represent liberal. He does, and I think he does a very good job as being kind of a perfect corporate Clinton Obama liberal. I mean, he's articulate. There is no length to which he won't stretch his own imagination to support their views. And then you have, of course, the corporate right, and they have hundreds of people. If they want you to go to war, suddenly all these generals, admirals, colonels, intelligence experts show that if we do not attack someone immediately with everything we've got, then we're all at risk. Well, of course, these are all lies. And we'll have more people die this week from preventable medical errors than have died from all terrorist attacks by killing Americans in the last 20 years. They'll die this week. Not a single thing will be brought on the done. No expert will be brought on to counter these. All right, that's how it works. So first, you have to understand that the entire system is rigged. Even on some Pacifica stations, you'll hear programming, and you think, where are they getting their research? Why do they have these experts on? There's so many better people who would be more objective and balanced and honest. When was the last time you heard a group of panelists actually encouraging debate on 9/11, the truth behind it, and the commission? Well, with rare exception, it's mocked, ridiculed. That's the kind of imbalance that we see. So needless to say, if you have a good propagandist team and you're lying about GMOs and you're denigrating Seralini and you're denigrating anyone else that supports banning or labeling GMOs, you're already at an advantage. Because the average person, the average academic, the average doctor, lawyer, engineer, nurse, the average accountant, CPA, the average professional class never, ever, ever does its homework. You think they did before they came to a decision, but they haven't. Their academic endeavors stop for almost all intents and purposes when they graduated from their graduate schools and were certified. From then on, they only focus upon what they need to know in their given field, which may or may not require more in-depth research. But you get outside that field, you take an architect, you take a historian, you take a cardiovascular surgeon, you take a psychiatrist, and you ask them to look into something like Roundup, pesticide, genetic engineering. No, don't assume because a person is smart, gifted, and talented in one field, they're going to be smart, gifted, and talented in all fields. It's a big mistake we make. So let me go through some of the lies so you have it right and you can share this. Seralini, the great scientist, study was a chronic toxicity study. It was not a cancer study. Not long after being published, Seralini's study was maliciously ripped apart by so-called skeptics, the experts you see in the media. And the media, like Time magazine, and many industry-backed institutions like the New York Times that claimed it was badly designed cancer study. Well, first of all, stop right there. It was never a cancer study. The truth is that Seralini's study was actually a chronic toxicity study, and that met and exceeded all acceptable scientific standards. So they're trying to confuse you. It was not poorly designed, but it was never a cancer study. It found cancer, but it was not a cancer study. So they're wrong. So the next time someone says something about, it was a poorly designed cancer study, say, sorry, it was an outstandingly well-designed chronic toxicity study that found cancer. Next, no other long-term studies have ever been conducted on NK603 GM corn. Now, the chorus of whining that ensued about how Seralini's study allegedly contradicted all other similar studies is also invalid. Let me explain why. There is no other similar studies ever, not one in world history, conducted. Seralini's study is the only long-term study involving Monsanto's NK603 GM corn that has ever been conducted. I can't make it any more clear than that. So they're trying to compare, look at the other studies. What other studies? There were no other studies. Zero, zip, nothing. And anyone who says that is either a complete blathering idiot, a sellout, but they have no facts on their side. You do. It is the only study long-term ever done, ever, on Monsanto's NK603 GM corn. And it showed it to be toxic. Also, there was nothing wrong with the type of rats Seralini used. And then one of their criticisms involves the Sprague-Dowley variety of rat used by Seralini in his study. This same variety has been used by Monsanto on many occasions in its 90-day safety studies on GMOs. So it was, again, done to perfection. Also, the SD rats and humans are almost identically prone to developing cancer. So contrary to what you may have heard, the SD rats are not inherently more prone to cancer than humans, and in fact have almost an equal risk with humans. This makes them a perfect choice for a long-term safety study on GMOs that vindicates completely Seralini's use of them. Also, Seralini's study, far more in-depth than any safety study ever conducted by Monsanto. It is hypocritical for the mainstream scientific community to criticize Seralini's study methodologies, especially considering the fact that they were far more rigorous than those used by Monsanto to gain GMO approval. Seralini's sample size, testing protocols, and other methods all exceeded those routinely used by the biotech industry. And also, rejecting Seralini's study means rejecting all industry-backed safety studies. Logically speaking, there is no way to reject Seralini's findings about the dangers of GM corn without also rejecting the findings of the pro-GMO industry-backed studies that claim GMO corn is safe. Using the same arguments of the vested scientists and the media outlets that have attacked Seralini, the bulk of published data on GMO is thus false, which means GMOs have no place on the consumer market and must be withdrawn immediately. Also, Seralini's study proves all of the industry studies to be fraudulent. The only one of its kind conducted for longer than 90 days. Now, I just want to ask you something. Just common sense, nothing more. They do all these studies, but they never go more than 90 days, 3 months. Why? And then they say it's safe, and they're never questioned by the FDA or USDA. Why? Because Seralini found that the cancer started after 90 days. So are we to believe that no scientist out of a thousand that are out there ever decided just out of curiosity to do a longer study and found that, the cancer start after 3 months? So they get together and someone says, well, then stop the studies before they start. Stop them at 90 days. Hence, with plausible deniability, you can say, we never saw a single cancer in 90 days. But on 94 day, yeah, we started to get cancers, and by 120 days, we had lots of cancer. Are we to believe that since the industry has repeatedly been found lying, manipulating data, withholding every study that came out with negative effects, that they didn't know this and were hence, with malice aforethought, using we the American people and the world people as human guinea pigs just to profit? It's an open question. Next. The toxicity observed in Monsanto studies confirmed by Seralini studies. And by the way, it almost always goes completely unreported, but Monsanto's own GMO safety studies have observed toxicity from exposure and consumption. But this toxicity is routinely written off as being, quote, not biologically meaningful. But Seralini's study confirms that if Monsanto studies were performed for longer than 90 days, these same markers of toxicity would develop into the diseases observed by Seralini. And of course, the government did not require long-term studies. So that's it. Just be aware that the Seralini is the gold standard, showed him getting cancer, and therefore all GMOs should be banned. Next up, physicians and researchers across the world are overwhelmed by the booming numbers of people being diagnosed with obesity and diabetes. Now, the problem is not one that is faced solely in the United States or even just the developed world. Some researchers are unconvinced that deficits in physical activity levels and poor diet quality are capable of making much of a big impact. But I believe that's exactly what's happening that we're not paying attention to how bad each diet in each country is. And part of the reason is that each country is following America. When I travel around the world, I find now for the first time that the standard diets that have been around for hundreds or thousands of years in countries, those are gone. More often than not, what you're finding, except for the older people using them, in a more rural area, you're getting a cosmopolitan American diet. Fried everything, trans fats, saturated fats, animal proteins, pork, genetically modified stuff, high fructose corn syrup beverages, artificial sweetened, artificial flavored, artificial synthesized foods, and a gazillion calories. Then, in their affluence, more often than not, they've gone from working outside to working inside, on a computer, then television. So yeah, it's not complicated. Excess calorie consumption from adulterated, dead, denatured calories in, lack of exercise, and you have overweight, and you have diabetes. It's that simple. Not difficult to understand. I'm Gary Noll. We're here to talk about health, nutrition, living a longer life. One other thing, good news from the European Journal of Nutrition. Users of antioxidant vitamins, supplements, quote, may be at a reduced risk of cancer death, as well as premature death in general. And that's a major study into cancer and nutrition. In fact, they found, quote, a 48% reduction in the risk of cancer mortality over 11 years, published in the European Journal of Nutrition. In addition, the risk of all-cause death was reduced by 42% in people who supplemented with antioxidants from the beginning of the study. That's from the German Cancer Research Center and the University of Zurich. So, what's the takeaway message? Well, something we've been talking about for a long time. Every day, throughout the day, give your body antioxidants in whole organic foods, in fresh organic juices, in organic concentrates, where they wick off anywhere from 20 to 30% of the water, and therefore you're getting more of the actual concentrate, like a blueberry, blackberry, a boysenberry, a pomegranate concentrates. And then, of course, the most concentrated amount of antioxidants comes in the form of compounding powders, because you can take a lot of fruits and vegetables, wash them, dry them without heat, and then you get an enormous amount. And you can supplement. You can take vitamin C, vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, quercetin by mouth. And I suggest the best is a combination of all of the above. And I suggest 6 times a day, making sure that you have antioxidants from some combination going into your system. So this way you have protection of your cells. This study is showing that you could reduce your risk of death, as these people did over 11-year period, from that. Now, mind you, they're not taking high amounts of this, and they're not taking it in organic form, and they're not taking combinations. They're just taking relatively low doses, and they still had a, quote, 42% reduced risk in people who supplemented at the start of the study from dying of all causes. So just imagine if you did a lot more, how much longer you could live. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Noll. Happy to be broadcasting. Hope you tune in this evening to the Progressive Commentary Hour, where it's a program for thinking people, taking on very serious subjects in depth, always with new and challenging voices. Also, for those of you who tune in for any reason and are not able to get through on the computer or have some problem, you can always listen to this program live or go to the archives with a phone number, the most called-in number for listening in the world. The number, write it down, because you never know where you're going to be, where you're going to have to call in and listen over the telephone. 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. I'll tell you why this is important. Approximately 3 months ago, WPFW, the station you're listening to right now, had a power failure, and because they were doing some maintenance, I heard asbestos something clean up on a transmitter. Anyhow, our signal went from 50,000 watts to under 2,000 watts, and I was told it was around 1,500 watts, which is smaller than most college stations on campus. But there was no announcement. No one was told as a result. After about 63 days of not knowing when they turned on the radio where the show went, where the station went, they just went to other places. But on the very first day this happened, Jason, our program director, said, "Gary, thought you'd like to see this." And I said, "What is?" He said, "Well, you realize just at that hour of the day, we had 9,780 brand new," because it tells you whether it's a new or old listener, "brand new unique listeners." And I said, "Where'd they come from?" I said, "I don't know." So we know that almost 10,000 people listening on PFW shifted over to listening over the telephone. And the others, and I don't know how many, listened on the internet. But they didn't stop listening to the program. Now they can go back to listening to the, you know, the signal's back to 50,000 watts. We have a new program director, Tony Bates, and a new management team, and I'm very confident that we're going to turn the station around and make it vital again. We've got our signal back. Now we're going to get the audience back. But that's why having that number is so important, because you never know when you're going to need it, and it'll be there for you. Now for our environmental segment. As you might have heard from multiple programs we've done on Fukushima, the United States government, this administration, is intentionally and with malice aforethought choosing not to address the truth of Fukushima. The mainstream media has made it, for all intents and purposes, a non-event. But according to Christina Sarich of Natural Society, Fukushima could be 15,000 times worse than Hiroshima with removal of the fuel rods. Now, let me explain this. There is a Yale professor, and here's what he is saying. Quote, "All of humanity will be threatened for thousands of years if the Fukushima Unit 4 pool cannot be kept cool. Your worries about eating sesame-contaminated fish from the Pacific Ocean are grounded in fact. But this is a worldwide disaster, the most epic proportions just waiting to happen. If nothing else, it points to the necessity of nuclear-free power to fuel the planet. But in the meantime, more than 1,535 fuel rods must be meticulously removed from Unit 4, which in all likelihood is crumbling." End quote. Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Yale University, Charles Perrow. Quote, "Conditions in the Unit 4, 100 feet above the ground, are perilous. And if any two of the rods touch, it could cause a nuclear reaction that would be uncontrollable. The radiation emitted from all these rods, if they are not continually cool and kept separate, would require the evacuation of surrounding areas, including Tokyo. Because of the radiation at the site is 6,375 rods in the common storage pool could not be continuously cooled, they would fission, and all of humanity would be threatened for thousands of years." End quote. Whoa, that's a sobering thought. Now, let me do the math on this. We're talking about Tokyo, the largest concentration of people in the world. Let me put it this way. Tokyo is larger in its concentration of people than New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago combined. Oh, and throw in Dallas, Houston, Pittsburgh, and Washington, D.C. That's how many people you have. Then you have an additional 15 million people who live within the wind cycles. So you're talking about having to evacuate approximately 60 million people. How exactly are you going to move 60 million people, all the industries affiliated with that? Where are you going to put them? Now, how are you going to get them there? Within some reasonable period of time before they're too contaminated and it caused their death or disease. Are we having any discussions on this? I'm sure the Japanese have had discussions. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't hear in the near future where Japan and China and Japan and Russia have made some form of formal agreement where China's phantom cities that are in the middle of the country and really remarkable architectural structures, but they're ghost towns, and they could hold 60 million. That's one problem. Then you could have places for rebuilding industry. Russia has islands that have once belonged to Japan before the Second World War, and that could be a second option, but take longer. But you're talking about years for all this to happen. And if there's another monsoon, if there's another earthquake, and it doesn't have to be a big one this time, that precarious building 4, which is sinking, sunk over 29 inches, it collapses, everything in life as we know it changes. And we're not at all prepared for any of it. You see, in the early stages of the Fukushima disaster, TEPCO, under the influence of the Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency, tried to keep the full ramification of Fukushima under wraps, and now the entire country faces a possible $1 trillion price tag and multiple decades of active cleanup to make this all go away. But that will all be about a moot point if the fuel rods aren't removed properly. And all the boron between spent fuel rods has disintegrated. What this means is that a nuclear chain reaction could ensue if the rods get too close together in the pools, causing nuclear fission like we've never endured. In less than 2 months, TEPCO plans to remove these rods, admitting that they haven't the expertise or resource to do it properly, and that is what it would take, absolute perfection. And according to global research, quote, some 400 tons of fuel and that pool could spew out to more than 15,000 times as much radiation as was released at Hiroshima. Quote, more than 6,000 fuel assemblies now sit in a common pool just 50 meters from Unit 4. Some contain plutonium. The pool has no containment over it. It's vulnerable to loss of coolant, the collapse of a nearby building, another earthquake, another tsunami, and more. Overall, more than 11,000 fuel assemblies are scattered around the Fukushima site. According to longtime expert and former Department of Energy official Robert Alvarez, there is more than 85 times as much lethal cesium on site as was released at Chernobyl. End quote. So I'm suggesting that we let our legislators know that we're demanding that this becomes a Marshall Project, that the entire world, every country, offer its best scientists and engineers in an effort to resolve the problem. Nothing less is going to work. And finally, from our environmental segment today, from Elizabeth Renter from Natural Society, well, we know, of course, that air pollution's bad. When I was just in L.A., my eyes were burning for about 3 hours because of the pollution. Other people get used to it, but at a cost. When I was in Denver, it was very polluted. Interesting, I was just in Denver 48 hours ago, and as I was riding in I was told by the driver that it rained over 1.3 trillion, with a T, trillion gallons of water in 3 days, largest amount in the state's history. And it created a 30-foot wall of water and mud that swept away 20,000 houses and destroyed thousands more in just the blink of an eye. Never thought it would happen. Well, unfortunately, it's happening, and there's just a lot of pollution there. In any case, if you remember, on this program, I repeatedly stated that Colorado would be one place that would not be sustainable for a lot of reasons, that being one of them. But also, it's running out of water. What the irony? It has severe drought. Its trees die. It becomes a wildfire haven, the largest in the state's history just 3 months ago. Then it ends up with more rain than it's ever had out of a storm out of the Gulf, and then it floods, and still it's going to be in drought. But there are several other states, including Oklahoma, Utah, Nevada, half of Texas, half of California, southern half of California, New Mexico, Kansas, Georgia, northern Florida, half of Alabama, that are also non-sustainable. Now, separately, yeah, these places, some of them have more pollution than others, but we never think that it's going to kill us. A new study from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, has released data that as many as 200,000 premature deaths in the United States are attributable to pollution. Now, this is published in the peer-reviewed journal Atmospheric Environment. The study looked at pollution from six different emission sectors: road transportation, marine transportation, electric power generation, rail transportation, industry, and commercial and residential sources like heating and cooling. And they found that among the 200,000 early deaths attributed to pollution, exhaust from motor vehicles was responsible for most, 53,000 annually. But in a close second was electrical generation emissions. Quote, "It was surprising to me just how significant road transportation was, especially when you imagine that coal-fired power plants are burning relatively dirty fuel." That was according to Dr. Barrett, assistant professor of aeronautics and astronautics on this. So what it means is, yes, we complain that China causes 1.4 million deaths from air pollution, but now we have 200,000 deaths. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I'm so in love with you. Whatever you want to do is all right.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm sure many of you are concerned about the subversion of our constitutional rights, our Bill of Rights, the principles upon which we can create a happy and meaningful life. According to Colin Todhunter, virtually every government in the world creates an illusion for its people, and I agree with that. Let's just be very specific. Let's just first start off with taking a look at economic policy. Think about this for a moment. Government policies might hurt us, but we're all on a one-way route to happiness, or so we're told by the politicians and the corporate media and the spokespersons for the ones who make us suffer and endure in ways they never have to. That means the privileged elites, including the privileged elite in the media, and their ruling class. But if you listen to them, every one of them keeps coming back to the same concept. If you simply shut up and don't protest, unless we tell you to, and do what you're supposed to do, you'll have happiness. Well, and I'll show you the second largest morgue in America, Sloan Kettering. And every one of those patients did exactly what they were supposed to do. They ate the diet that they were told was the American diet, that the President of the United States, is, all of them, have eaten. They lived the lifestyle. They watched the television programs they were told to watch. They bought the products they were told would make their life happier. When they got sick, they were told it was not their fault, it was just genes. And when they were told that it would be surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, or hormone replacement therapy, they honored that. They never questioned. And then they end up toe tag. And after 40 years of a war on cancer, which has become a medical Vietnam, not one of those doctors, nurses, hospital technicians, scientists, or the buffoons that we call members of Congress, the lowest life degenerates I know of on the planet, these people see no irony in the fact that everything they do fails for the people that they promise a different outcome, but succeeds marvelously for those who are on the receiving end of all the money and the prestige. Isn't it rather ironic that we praise doctors for being noble and gallant in their efforts when the patient dies? I think, if anything, there should be a moment of reflection and have some humility and a sense of sorrow and ask, but was there anything I could have done differently? Is there another belief system, another approach? But there is none of that, never a question in true believers. Western governments set out to con ordinary working folk by bringing us war in the name of peace, austerity, in order to achieve prosperity, and suffering to eventually make us happy. Is there any room for truth? Politicians never like to tell the public the truth. The feel-bad factor is never a vote winner. Best to keep the public in the dark and rely on positive spin. If people knew the truth, they wouldn't be happy. And selling the feel-good factor is all-pervasive. In this age of irretrievable materialism, the route to happiness is more goods, better goods, newer goods, and never-ending smorgasbord of commodities to be craved for, which will bring us happiness, I'm sure, aren't you? In league with private corporations, governments, we've learnt that our desires are to be filled by them, the other. And this will create a one-dimensional type of happiness based upon consumerism. But is there any other? I don't see any other advertised or promised. In part, Edward Bernays is responsible for this, the father of modern public relations and propaganda. He was expert in manipulating human perceptions of pain and pleasure, misery and happiness. Tap in or shape people's desires in a certain way, and you can sell them virtually any notion of happiness or reality, regardless of how bogus it may be. Under American capitalism, the lie was that everyone would all live up to the government's standards, society standards, and you'd live happily ever after because of, not in spite of, gross inequality, massive privileges, and disadvantages in exploitation of labor, which all went under the notion of mediocrity. And if you were exceptional, then you were part of meritocracy, meaning we'll give you a fair day's wages if you give us a fair day's work. And for 30, 40 years, that worked. Now, people give extra work and are given minimal benefit. And still, they believe in the rest of the illusion. With whatever meager savings I have, I better run out to the mall. I better watch something. I better buy that new cell phone. You're still connected. Bernays' propaganda techniques set the stage for the contract of liberal democracy. The U.S. government quickly learned that angels and demons could be manufactured out of thin air, from Guatemala to Congo to Vietnam to Iraq, and wars and destabilizations could be built on packs of lies, and lies about evildoers, lies about the impending misery they would inflict upon the U.S. and on faraway countries, and lies about the government delivering us from impending doom. And of course, It is best to arm ourselves to the teeth with nuclear weapons to ensure no one imposes their miserable regime or awful ways of life on us, and to prevent us from shuddering with the fear of the threat of nuclear Armageddon on a daily basis. It's a case of don't worry, be happy. Forget about it. Watch TV. Even the very real danger of near instant annihilation of the species is shoved to one side for the sake of time for feel good. And the best way to instill that feeling is to have us endlessly buying stuff. They want us locked into addiction. Addiction is the pursuit of acquisition, of hedonism, of chasing the dream, the addiction to the belief that there is a point to it all, where happiness is achieved by acquisitive materialism. But to paraphrase a sentiment from Buddhism, someone somewhere may well be suffering on our behalf for this happiness, this hedonism. There is no maybe about it. It happens. From your sneakers to your running shorts to your sunglasses to the plates you eat from and the silverware to the phones you're using, we're connected to it. So much blood has been spilled by those unfortunate enough to have been born in certain parts of the world on behalf of people in other parts of the world who deem the need to possess resources to be more worthy than the lives destroyed in order to grab them. Recall Madeleine Albright saying that the deaths of 500,000 Iraqi children was a price worth paying for furthering the geopolitical interests of U.S. corporations. And yes, a drone attack here, some collateral damage there, and those boys in the U.S. control centers are happy with a hard day's killing. In the U.S. Declaration of Independence, there is the phrase, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Freedom and happiness, or the pursuit of it, is central, albeit built on the misery of others. Life, liberty, and happiness have become debased. Fed to the masses, happiness has been confused with excessive individualism and the never-ending pursuit of material goods. It became hijacked by the likes of Bernays, with his knowledge of psychoanalysis. By the way, Sigmund Freud was his uncle. He knew it was relatively easy to manipulate desires and get people hooked on indulging in certain behavior, even if ultimately they didn't really want or need those consumer products. Those feel-good products were simply false needs, and they strove to acquire them. Getting them hooked is what really counts. And we are a nation hooked. Medical certainties, energy certainties, financial certainties, food certainties. You have no time to think about disillusionment because you are all too busy buying the next quick fix for happiness product. Maybe it's a Wayne Dyer product or Tony Robbins product, and they all, you know, are emulating the Deepak. Is there ever enough for him or any of them? I think not. It's called retail therapy. For good reasons. A therapy that has no long-term benefit. It's a feel-bad, feel-good, then feel-bad-again spiral. But who needs this form of happiness, this type of liberty, this ultimately underpinned by an Albright-esque view of life and death? No one. Yet the masses are encouraged to swallow the lies. The propaganda is pervasive. Look no further than all those feel-good Hollywood trash films passed off as blockbusters that gloss over, as usual, and ignore all the mundane, miserable aspects of life in working-class America. Little wonder half the world seems to want to live in the United States. The great American dream was built on craving and propaganda. It was built upon stripping the environment bare, on this unsustainable raping of nature to fuel profits, perpetual war, misery, and suffering. Sociologist C. Wright Mills noted the existence of a post-war power elite in the back of 1956. An integrated power elite of big corporations, the military, the political establishment. Fast forward all these years, these decades, and it's responsible for the body count of 10 million dead and counting. Just look at it. The statistic, the dirty secret that Hollywood never tell. 10 million slaughtered in U.S.-backed wars and by death squads, covert ops and destabilizations. Drug running and exportating of terror and murder glorified by countless Hollywood icons, commentators, and politicians under the banner of championing freedom and democracy. The system in place exists to benefit not everyone, but a small minority, about 7,000 people. That's it. These are the extremely wealthy of the world who have cemented their position on the back of their ancestors and hundreds of years of capitalism. These are the people setting the globalization and war agendas for G8, G20, NATO, the World Bank, and World Trade Organization. They are from the highest levels of finance, capital, and transnational corporations. These billionaires, these transnational capitalist class, dictate global economic policies and decide on who lives and who dies and which wars are fought and inflicted on which people, although they are having a bit of difficulty in kickstarting it right now with their see-through lies and hypocrisy. Syria is a case in point. These crimes against humanity are never mentioned as such. Instead, these people are called wealth creators. They are the ones that are glorified by the talking head idiots, all of them, because there are no other, on all these talk shows, both radio and television. They are the self-anointed role models and captains of industry, the high flyers who have stolen ordinary people's wealth, who have slashed away at everything ethical and stashed it away in tax havens, who have bankrupted economies because of their reckless gambling and greed, and who have imposed a form of globalization that results in devastation and a war for those who attempt to remain independent from them, or structurally adjusted violence via privatization, globalization, and economic neoliberalism for millions of countries, people, I should say, that have acquiesced. Little wonder, then, in conclusion, that attempts to redress the balance, to snatch control away from this criminal class, have been brutally suppressed over the decades. This class has used intelligence agency or military might and the media to attempt to subvert or annihilate any opposition. And you think today's unique? It is not. I'll take you back to El Salvador and Chile, to Egypt and India's tribal belt, to ordinary folk across the world who have subjugated themselves to policies that have resulted in oppression, poverty, and conflict. But this is all passed off by politicians and the corrupt mainstream media as the way things must be. And anyone who stands up to this lie is ridiculed at best or spied upon, tortured, and killed at worst in order to prevent the truth from emerging. And that truth is that many of us know what happiness really is, the need for society necessary to establish it based upon communality and economic equality, and that the immensely wealthy who stand in its way do all things necessary to prevent us from having it. And that is the truth of it. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Let us now say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Well, I'm going to be following you today with essentially taking a look at what's going on now in Congress, but we also have an update on the case of Marissa Alexander, whose conviction and 20-year sentence on a stand-your-ground case in Florida were thrown out by an appellate court last week.
Great. We look forward to it. Utrice Lead right now.